This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled weekend. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a glamorous walk down memory lane with photos from an iconic ad campaign of luxury furs, a celebration of the life of Pope John Paul II through art, sculpture, and video, or a new play that examines the classic themes of love and money with a local flavor. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. An iconic advertising campaign that began in the late 1960s comes to life in photographs from the Black Glamour fur ads. What becomes a legend most? The tagline for the ad campaign, and also the exhibit's title, which opens Thursday at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art. The black and white photos of stars from a bygone era are from the collection of legendary advertising executive Peter Rogers, who was the art director for the Luxury Fur campaign, and he joins us now in the studio. Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You know, this is a rare opportunity for the public to see legendary figures from a bygone era in an exciting ad campaign that's left a mark on our culture. Can you tell us about the campaign and how these iconic photos came to be?
We were hired by a group of mink ranchers called the Great Lakes Mink Association, and they had no identity. And at that time, fur advertising was a woman standing in front of a Bentley in front of the Plaza Hotel in New York City, and that was the positioning. So we decided we had to do something more than that. So we coined the name Black Llama based on hiring all these legendary women and later men. And it became so successful that a lady would go to, say, a Neiman Marcus or a Bergdorf Goodman, and if it didn't have the Black Llama label in the coat, they wouldn't buy it. We really forced furriers and retailers to carry the label. And it was natural dark ranch mink, black. That's how the black came about, and we added the Glamma. B-L-A-C-K-G-L-A-M-A.
Now, what will we see? These are 50 iconic photos of legendary stars that are in this exhibit.
Well, I hope there's 60 of them if 60, they get them all framed in time. Who knows? But it's everyone from Claudette Colbert to Joan Crawford to Betty Davis to Faye Dunaway, Liza Minnelli, Ray Charles was one, and Pavarotti, the opera star. And usually it was a single person, but there's one spread where we had Rudolph Nureyev, Dame Margot Fonteyn, and Martha Graham together.
Wow.
So it was quite an exciting ad.
And these photos are not in front of the Bentley, but are...
only the person on seamless paper and the black llama coat, the fur. But these people are so famous that we don't use their name. They had to be famous and recognizable. And so it became an ego trip for them to do it. After we did the first five, agents started calling us. And it's still running.
The campaign is still running?
I think it may be the longest running advertising campaign in existence, certainly of this caliber of luxury items.
We all have favorites. Who are some of your favorites and why? And I'm sure that there's a story behind each one of these.
Oh, there's a lot of stories. Crawford became a really close friend. She used to take me to 21 all the time for dinner. And she would get out of the car and she would drop the mink coat on the floor and drag it in. And she said, let's show them how a legend makes an entrance. And Claudette Colbert became family to me. And I spent at least 30 birthdays at her house in Barbados. She was one of the most glamorous women I've ever met. She had it. It was innate. She was also French, which doesn't hurt. Well, it was great fun to do because, you know, I grew up in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and I spent my life in the movies because there was nothing else to do there. So I never dreamed that I would meet Joan Crawford, let alone become a friend, or Claudette Colbert.
Tell us about your journey into the world of advertising. How a boy from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, made it to the Big Apple.
Well, they say when I left the Methodist Hospital at birth, I screamed New York. So there was no question I was going there. It's just been a wonderful experience and a wonderful time for me. My first job was $40 a week at an agency as a runner. And I was told by my mentor in Hattiesburg, Milton Fine, to go to bed at night early and never turn down an invitation anywhere because you never know what might happen. And I met this woman at a dinner party from Texas who owned an agency. And I worked for her for 10 years and then bought her out. And then I got the Vidal Sassoon account. We were hired to do the hair products, mass market. And I wrote, "If you don't look good, we don't look good," Vidal Sassoon. And that was on television all the time. And once you sort of find your niche, then I never solicited an account in my life. I had a list of accounts that I wanted, like Baccarat, and finally they called me. And it just happened.
So now, the photos, these are large black and white works?
They were basically 9 by 12 when they ran in the magazines, but we also made big posters of all of them, and they were used all over the world in fur salons and the windows. And these are the original prints. And they're all black and white because it was black mink. We didn't need color. And we plotted every shot before they arrived. We researched them and tried to capture what the world saw in film or wherever. And I think we succeeded in most cases, wouldn't you say?
Did you ever think that the ad campaign would be the subject of a museum exhibition?
No, I didn't. But when I croak, which I hope is not anytime soon, they're going to the museum. Yeah. I'm leaving them to the museum.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Well, they deserve a home, a second home.
You really made magic and watched it happen.
Well, I had a good time doing it.
Was there any star that was perhaps difficult on a shoot?
Well, Dietrich.
Marlena?
Marlena. Every time we had an appointment with her, she would cancel. But if it rained, she would cancel. If it snowed, she would cancel. And she would never accept a fur coat. And at any rate, we finally got a date. And she came, and it was a miraculous shooting. And she sat down, and all of a sudden she crossed her leg and pulled the fur back, and we got the famous legs. So afterwards I said, "How great, Miss Dietrich, that we got those gorgeous legs." And I'll never forget, she said, "The legs are not so beautiful, darling. I just know what to do with them." And she sure did.
That's priceless.
Well, I hope it's a glamorous evening. I think the photographs are unique. You know, it is unique to have this many people of that caliber in one room.
Well, Peter, thank you very much.
Thank you. It was fun.
It was.
I hope it's printable.
Legendary advertising executive Peter Rogers is retired and lives in New Orleans. Photographs from the iconic Black Glamour Fur advertising campaign go on view Thursday at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art. Peter Rogers will be honored on Saturday at the Black Glamour Gala Legendary Evening at the Ogden Museum, 925 Camp Street, 7 p.m. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm Diane Mack. As the Vatican is closing its doors today for cardinals selecting a new pope, the New Orleans Museum of Art is opening a show that looks back at the legacy of Pope John Paul II. Eileen Fleming reports the exhibit features the art and artifacts of his time.
It was almost a year ago that New Orleans Archbishop Gregory Amon contacted Wendy Vitter about coordinating an exhibit devoted to Pope John Paul II. The show would highlight the pontiff's visit to New Orleans 25 years ago. Vitter says it's just a remarkable coincidence that the show is opening at a time when a new pope will be selected.
The timing is amazing, and that's why there's no doubt in my mind that God has a hand in this, because nobody could have predicted this timing.
Vitter is the project director of the show called Portrait of Faith, John Paul II in Life and Art. The idea began with Archbishop Amon in conjunction with the Museum of Biblical Art in Dallas and the Pope John Paul II Cultural Center in Washington, D.C. The New Orleans Museum of Art is hosting.
Clearly, New Orleans Museum of Art wanted the touchstone of the exhibit to be art and art-related. And from my very selfish point of view, I like to see every single item associated with the Pope's visit, from the visors the volunteers wore to committee pins to every little thing. And our curator had to take all of those details and try to merge it together into something that would resonate with visitors.
The art is evident immediately on entering the exhibit, with bronze sculptures by Gibbs Singleton. And they did connect with visitor Megan Lees, who traveled from Laurel, Mississippi to attend the opening weekend.
I think what's really interesting is, most of the time artists, when they do things, you can they inflict themselves on their work. And if you look at all his work, his face is almost on every single piece. That's kind of different. That's kind of neat.
Jim Orr lives in the New Orleans area and came to the exhibit for a chance to see the papal appearance he missed 25 years ago when his job didn't give him time off to see the Pope in person. He says he was impressed by the art on display.
It's a smorgasbord for the eyes, really. It's the art and the religious artifacts are just overwhelming.
Marie Alvarez didn't see the Pope in person either, but she still remembers the excitement.
Oh, it was like a jazz fest or a Mardi Gras. I mean, it was big. Everywhere you turn, somebody said, "Are you going to go see the Pope? Are you going to go see the Pope?" It was big. I hope the next Pope does as well as this one did.
The fine art on display includes acrylic resin crucifixes by Frederick Hart and mixed media canvas murals by Fred Villanueva. But not all displays are pure art. There are a few personal and lighthearted artifacts. There's a John Paul talking action figure boasting 22 phrases, and there's his life story, as told by Marvel Comics. Vitter says it was a goal to have an accessible and ecumenical show. Some written comments from visitors are displayed on a glass wall of post-it notes. One is from a Saints fan, noting the Pope's visit coincided with the team's first winning season ever, 12-3. John Barine of Rockford, Illinois, saw the Pope during his visit to St. Louis in 1999, so he wanted to see what a papal visit had been like in New Orleans.
He was like a rock star before he came in to celebrate Mass, and that's how you felt in his presence. So I can imagine the people that come to this exhibit will get that same sense of him, especially if they've seen him at the outdoor Masses, or you just see his face, because he just had that charismatic look and a dynamism that was unbelievable. He was just a saintly man.
Carolyn Pate says she came to the exhibit because, even though not a Catholic, she admired the Pope as a spiritual leader.
He just seemed so real. And toward the end of his life, when he blessed the elderly, as he was getting elderly, it just was such a real example of how Christ would have been.
The exhibit also includes some papal garments worn on some of his many international appearances. It runs through mid-June at the New Orleans Museum of Art. For WWNO Inside the Arts, I'm Eileen Fleming.
A new musical continues its run uptown. Will love or the love of money prevail? It's an age-old question that is being explored in celebrated playwright Ricky Graham's new musical, The Money Box, an adaptation of Molière's The Miser. Graham's adaptation takes place in the swinging 1960s right here in New Orleans. We caught up with him by phone. Ricky, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your new musical, The Money Box. Tell us about this adaptation of Molière's classic satire, The Miser, which I believe has a local twist.
Right. Georgia Gresham, the chair of the drama department at Loyola, asked me to direct a musical into their performance schedule. I talked to Sean Patterson, who is the co-writer of the show, and Sean has been invaluable, you know, acting as a dramaturg as well as a writer. And Jefferson Turner, my longtime collaborator as a composer. And we thought we want to do an adaptation of something that would probably be offered on a college syllabus. So we all thought, well, Molière. Now, it isn't a Yap musical. I know I do lots of local satire stuff, but it isn't that. The characters are real. The miser character himself is probably the most recognizably New Orleans sounding in the way he speaks, the cadences, his phrases.
So this is basically comedy of the absurd that you have taken to a musical production, and you're dealing with the classic conflict of love and love of money?
It's more a comedy of character, and it's about the basic things, the need for money and the desire for love, and that's the two main ideas of the play. And will love or money triumph, of course, is what we have to sit through this journey and to find out at the end.
So the father is a rich nightclub owner in the French Quarter. He has two children who want to marry people that he
would never approve of because they're not rich enough. Then we find out that the owner, Midas Harpagon, actually is planning to marry the girl next door because he finds that she has some property that he wants. And so he then is in competition with his son for the same girl. And all this done with music and singing and dancing.
Mm-hmm. You picked the 60s because?
Well, we like that era. We think that's like a classic era for the New Orleans R&B sound. It's probably like the last vestiges, the 50s and 60s, where parents seem to have some control over their children's future. By the time you got to the 70s, and you know, there was so much youth rebellion that it would just seem too antiquated. It has a charmingly removed feeling being now, almost 60 years ago.
So now you have your playwright hat on in this production. Are you also in the production?
No, I'm just directing it. It's all Loyola students. We were lucky enough to find 12 very talented students who play everything from the backup singing group to Harpagon himself.
What is the message you hope to leave with audiences after this theater experience?
The play itself says, go after what your heart desires, and don't be afraid to keep going for it until you get it. It runs the gamut of human emotion, everything from need and greed to love and redemption.
Yeah, it comes full circle.
It sure does. Molière was terrific at writing comedy and writing sort of satirical pokes at people, but he was writing about real people in a realistic yet funny way.
Very nice. Ricky, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Inside the money box, making money's the American way. For the things you crave, work and save.
New Orleans veteran actor and playwright Ricky Graham. The Money Box runs through March 17th with performances in Loyola University's Marquette Hall. And we have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. The NOLA Project presents Catch the Wall, a new work written by New Orleans playwright Gabrielle Riesman. The play is based on her teaching experiences in a New Orleans charter school and closely examines the intersection between two very different aspects of culture for New Orleans kids. school reform, and bounce music. The two worlds end up crisscrossing in surprising ways that are distinctly New Orleans. Catch the Wall opens March 14th and runs through March 24th at Dillard University's Cook Theater, 2601 Gentilly Boulevard. More info at nolaproject.com. The 58th Chamber Music Season of the New Orleans Friends of Music continues Tuesday, March 19th, with a performance by the renowned Emerson String Quartet at Tulane University's Dixon Hall. The concert begins at 8 p.m., preceded by a free lecture at 7 p.m. by John Joyce of the Tulane Music Department. The Emerson Quartet program will include works by Haydn, Bartok, and Schumann. Tickets are available online, friendsofmusic.org, or at the door. Free admission for Tulane students. And Southern Rep will be offering 5 musical theater summer camps for kids of all ages. Every child who participates in the workshop is automatically cast in the play. This summer's offerings include 2 sessions of Disney's Cinderella, Guys and Dolls, Once on This Island, and Pirates of Penzance. For registration information, you can visit the website southernrep.com. Click on Arts Education and choose 2013 Camps. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.